Hola.
How's it going?
Bien.
Bien. That's good. You enjoying your 3-day weekend?
Yes, it's a 4-day weekend for me.
Oh, really? Did you have Friday off, or are you
Yeah, we
taking
took.
to? Okay, you did take Friday off.
Yeah, my wife and I both took Friday off. We usually put our garden in this weekend. We usually take Friday off to go to the nursery so we don't have to be there when it's super busy with everybody else.
Yeah.
Also gives us an extra day to get everything done.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
So you're
So
planning all your food that you eat.
yes,
You're
actually
how
we're
many
planning.
fish did you plant?
Well, about 3 or 4 salmon plants. We got like a haddock bush.
Nice,
Yeah,
nice.
some tuna trees.
That's very cool.
But no, actually, we're doing a little bit of a smaller garden this year than last year.
Just
But
weed.
yeah, pretty much just marijuana.
Yeah.
That was a joke if any authorities are listening.
Yeah.
He's from Colorado. Can't trust him. This is Geek Brunch Retrocast, episode 70.
Ah, you got the number.
Yeah,
We're almost at 100. How about
not
that?
memorable. I know. I'm surprised we even did 70 of these.
Yeah.
It's pretty impressive, to me at least.
Yeah, it's a lot.
But I got us a sponsorship here.
Oh yeah.
This episode's brought to
Mabel.
you, yeah, by the Mabel and Harley Association.
Yeah.
That's brought to you by Kenner's Smash Up Derby. Sounds like real racers. Now with Smash Up cards available individually. Four models: Tough Tom, Bug'em, Boss Henry, and Blast'em. Smash Up Derby. Smash 'em and put 'em back again.
Did you have those?
No, these I think were a little early for me. I saw an ad for them in one of the comics I read, and that came out
Oh.
1972, so I was negative.
I don't think I had those. The closest I ever came to them was like Tyco racetracks were really big back then, and then somebody put out a non-Tyco racetrack, but you could race cars, but you could also switch lanes, which was something I could never do with the Tyco ones, at least the ones I had. And what it would allow you to do is if you could catch the other car, or you would allow you to smash it. Like you it would it ha it'd have like little bumpers on the back, and you could like hit the bumpers and the trunk would pop and cause you to drive slower and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So like you
Nice.
always had a goal of trying to get in back of the person you were playing and hit him in the back. But you could also hit him in the front, but it depends on which car had the worst damage.
Yeah, I think the only kind of racing tracks I had as a kid were just ones that you could put your matchboxes on.
Yeah.
Matchbox cars, obviously.
Or the Hot Wheels.
Hot Wheels, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, those just.
Hot Wheels had a lot of them. Matchbox, not too much. Matchbox had the more detailed.
Yeah, maybe they were Hot Wheels ones.
Matchbox had. Hot Wheels had the more like non-standard cars, like crazy cars and stuff, and all kinds of stuff you could do.
Yeah, from different properties and
Yeah,
stuff.
different properties, cars that never existed.
Yeah.
Whereas Matchbox, they had like the real cars, like with and the thing that was cool about Matchbox, I mean, if you were a Matchbox fan, is the doors and stuff would open sometimes,
Oh, yeah.
so you could get the
That's right.
door to open, like the car door open. But that's if you were like a collector of, oh yeah, I really want a more looking 57 Chevy or something. You know, it looks more
Right.
like a 57 Chevy than the Hot Wheel did, because
Yeah.
they would tend to exaggerate things in their designs, which was more kid friendly, I think, is the Hot Wheels, because they were more exaggerated and cool looking, you know.
Yeah, because nowadays I think you have collectors who are into the Matchbox if they're really into old cars and stuff.
Yeah.
But I think I had a little of both, maybe. Probably more Hot Wheels than the other.
I had the
But
Hot Wheels, but those tracks were all manual, at least the ones I had, but I'm a lot older than you. So like if you had a loop or something, you would have to take the car to the top of the loop and then drop it and then have it go through the loop and stuff like that.
yeah, whatever ones I had were manual too, because I remember trying to push the car fast enough to get it to go over the loop on its own. And
Yeah,
I always get to the
you try to do it without it falling in the
yeah
middle.
I would get to the top and then just drop on it, drop straight down like a rock.
So like when Tyco started, Tyco was known for their trains and their cars. They were like electrified cars where they would be powered on electricity, and they were really cool cars because they had a little prong that would power it on the bottom, and it would fit in the middle of the track, and you would just line up that prong with the track, and you'd be able to power it. So, it was cool to race those cars. I
Yeah, I'm
really
sure
liked
there's probably some influence from train tracks and stuff.
Yeah.
That's something that have you ever known anybody that was really into train, doing the train sets?
No, but I used to always like spend hours, like one of the things at our state fair was like they used to have like this the train collectors that would like do these really extravagant train sets with the little people and everything, and they would go around the entire building like these trains, and then they would switch, and you could just sit there all day as a kid and just watch these trains go everywhere. The only train track I had is I had an electronic train set, but it was just a circular one. Do you know what I mean? So you put it on the train set and then you would drive it around, but and you could control the speed. It had a switch. You could go like low, medium, high, and high was hard to keep it on the track, especially on the circular rail, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I never really got too much into them. I did have a hand-me-down train set from my dad. My dad has a lot of cousins, and the one of the youngest ones is kind of like halfway in between my parents and myself in age, probably. And so when I was growing up, my dad's cousin had in the attic of his parents, they had a big train set. So I had a hand-me-down of his that he was getting rid of that I never really used that much. I think I hooked it up once or twice, and then we didn't really have the space for it in the basement, so it just kind of got packed away. But I always used to like going up and taking a look, because he had it all set up where he had a really huge one, and it had all the decorations around it and stuff
Yeah.
for the train to drive through, and it was pretty
Those were
elaborate.
amazing as a kid, 'cause you see the little people, the little towns, and a lot of them had like switching like on the train track and stuff, so it'd switch to a different lane and do some cool stuff. I really dug that. These operators that would run these huge tracks, they'd have to switch them on time because they had multiple trains on the tracks. So they could crash their own trains if they weren't careful. But it was really one of my favorite things to do at the state fair was to go look at these tracks for some reason, these trains. Some of the fairs will still have some. Like we went to the Colorado one several years ago, and there was a small one. We have this squirrel that likes to eat the bird feed. Yeah. And Harley like doesn't like chase anything. Like she'll let the birds, she doesn't give a shit about the birds or the squirrel or the rabbits, but for some reason, I cannot explain this at all, but we have two robins. And she just doesn't like those robins. Like it could be any of these other kind of birds, any of them, the grackles or the little sparrows or the finches, or she doesn't give the doves. She doesn't care about the two doves. We have two doves that have babies in our fence every year. Those are my favorite because the doves, they have like this really cool sound when they flap those wings. They go, woo, 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 woo. It's a really cool sound that the dove has.
Interesting.
Yeah. When they take off, it sounds really cool.
Yeah, that's weird there. I wonder what it is that gets her about those robins in particular.
And the robins are interesting too because they don't feed off the bird feed. They come to our yard to pick worms because they're a different type of bird. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll wait for the grass to get wet and then they'll come and pop out a bunch of worms. Whereas the other birds, all of those other ones, even the grackles will eat anything. They're kind of like the scavenger bird. They'll eat seed, they'll eat worms, they'll eat whatever it takes. They're the cannibal ones, I call. Mm. And they look like really small crows with weird eyes, and they're shiny as hell. They're not a very pretty bird.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that name.
They're not my favorite. And then we got the other bird that we get, and luckily they stay in our aspen trees, is the woodpecker. And those are cool looking, but man, do they peck at a lot of stuff. They come into the yard and just beat the hell out of the ground. But I've had some coworkers where they beat the hell out of their house too.
Jeez.
Yeah, there's the robin. Just came by, flew off. But Harley lights up when the robins are there. And the robins are one of my favorite looking birds with the orange chests, and I don't know, they look really cool. The doves are my favorite. And then probably the finches. The grackles are my least favorite. They're the most interesting to watch, though, because they don't give a shit. And they're awkward as hell. Oh, and then Barb's got the humming. I do comics. Barb does birds. We got the hummingbirds. Like the hummingbirds are interesting because Barb could be out there, like, just putting new food out there. And the hummingbirds will just fly right by her face, you know, and just woof. They don't care.
Yeah, it's like I always joke with her about, I like to pretend that she has a podcast about eagles.
Yeah.
She posts about them on Facebook so much.
Yeah. She's like the eagles with the way I am with comics, like people that talk bad about or freak out about comic books. You know, that's like my pet peeve. Well, if those people on the Eagle Cam start freaking out, she gets really nervous.
See, yeah, I've had a cardinal show up in the backyard a few times recently. Those are kind of cool to look at, and cardinals and blue jays and Orioles. I'm always surprised at how bright the color.
Oh yeah, those are bright. We don't get those here, but those are, I bet they're very pretty birds. Like, I've seen them before.
Yeah.
They're really colorful. We get colorful finches. Like, they have a lot of color. And it seems like when spring comes, you get the really colorful ones. And then as time goes to the right and we start entering fall, it turns into the gray sparrows. Like, and then they hang around until winter starts. I always say, you're going to kill those birds. They're not going to know to migrate. They're just eating.
Yeah, those birds I mentioned, I always associate them with that color. You think of red with the Cardinals, if only just because of baseball, but they really are. It's not subtle. They really do have that color.
Yeah.
It really stands out. You can really see them.
With the class of birds, it's very interesting. Like, if you start... I learn a lot from Barb. Plus, I like birds a lot too. Like, I always thought, you know, like if there was such a thing as reincarnation, and you get reincarnated into something else, I would want to be a bird.
Oh yeah.
But I would like to be an ocean bird.
Mm.
Like a seagull or something, because I think those are really cool. Like, I love to go like to Baltimore and see all the like seabirds. I just love how they like. Dive for fish and stuff like that. Just really cool.
Mm.
I love owls, though. They're my favorite. Oh, wow. We're talking about grackles. We have three of them out there right now.
Oh, jeez.
And they kind of.
I don't. We must not have those
Let me see if
here,
I
or
could
I just have never
take a
heard of them.
picture of them. They have like blue shiny heads. It's weird, but they look black if you don't pay attention. But man, they make a mess of the bird bath too, because they like take the food out and they throw it into the bath and then eat it. Whereas all the other birds, they'll just eat. Barb should be on this podcast.
I was
What
gonna
are we
say
doing here?
this has been Barb's favorite part of
Episode, yeah.
episode ever.
Oh, they flew away as soon as I got my camera. Now Harley wants to go out. Go on.
Yeah. No photos, no photos.
Yeah.
Here comes the paparazzi.
They made a mess. There's water everywhere on the bird bath.
A bunch of jerks. They're like the raccoons of the birds world.
Yeah. The squirrel cracks me up because Harley doesn't care about it, but when she's out there and she looks at it, that they get real aggressive, like with their tail. You can hear them going, making all those squirrel noises, and their tail just goes back and forth like crazy. They like go
Yeah.
into attack mode.
Yeah, Mabel definitely, she sees a squirrel, she'll see it 2 or 3 yards down and she just goes into attack mode.
Yeah.
And I gotta hold her back, but she, her ears go up and she lifts her one front paw like she's ready to go after it. She's got some hunter in her. She's got that retriever in her. But
I still can't figure out Harley. I don't get it. She's weird.
maybe she just is going after the robins because her name's Harley Quinn, so
Yeah,
she
could
thinks
be. Could
that's her
be.
job.
That could be it. You're onto
Yeah,
something. The Batman thing. She wants
maybe
to
she saw a bat, she'd freak
kill
out
a
still.
Robin like the Joker.
Yeah. She wants to get out her sledgehammer and smash
That's
it.
She's funny.
Yeah. They are
Hey,
definitely.
did you read, I mean, this is a current event, but did you read Captain America number one?
No,
Do you
no.
want
I
to
mean,
read it?
I couldn't avoid what happened. I already
No, I
know what
know, but do
happened,
you want to
but
read it? Because I have an extra copy.
oh,
I mean, a digital. I have the
yeah.
co I
Either
have the
that or
code.
wait. I might as well just wait because I'm behind on everything else Marvel, so might as well
Yeah.
read it contextually to
I'd rather
other
give my
stuff comes
digital
out.
code to somebody that I know, like
Yeah.
personally, than somebody that is just
Right.
random on the Twitters. 'Cause you have those digital code people that they don't listen to podcasts or anything, but they're out there to get the digital codes regardless.
Fair. Yeah, you probably know somebody else that will want to read it. I'm curious to read it, but I pretty much read New Marvel 6 months behind, so
Yeah,
I might
on
as well just wait. Yeah.
yeah, I might as well read it in sequence.
Yeah.
And on the same platform, I guess, right?
Yeah, I mean, because I'm just starting to read the titles that post Secret War, so I'm just starting to read the early few issues of the Sam Wilson one. But
Which also he got death threats for. The first issue of Sam Wilson.
yeah, people are just ridiculous. I mean, they really should start being held responsible. If you make death threats against somebody
Yeah,
online,
they should be accountable, held accountable.
yeah, people need to be held accountable, and then they'll stop doing it, 'cause it's people, they wouldn't do it to
Yeah.
someone's face, or even if they had to make some kind of contact that's not just as easy as sending a tweet or something.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous. And then it makes those of us who are adults and are into comic books, it makes the rest of us look bad.
Yeah.
Those of us that are mature human beings. Mature in certain ways. I always go back to when I used I used to work with this friend that I don't work with anymore, but we used to joke about the typical stuff that, like we joke about, like farts and stuff. Always joking about farts and
Farts are always funny, though.
poop jokes and just things like that, And she was, this other woman that was near us was commented at one point they were like a bunch of 5-year-olds, and then she goes on, and she was the type that at least once a day this other woman came over to talk to her, and they would talk shit about other people for a while, And I thought to myself, ever since that, it really kind of crystallized for me, like I'd rather act like a 5-year-old than a teenager, I'd rather
Instead of the
joke.
gossip about other people.
Yeah, so for me, it's like part of that's my definition of maturity. Like, I don't take myself so seriously that I can joke about poop and farts and stuff, and but I'm not gonna be like talking shit about people behind their back, or giving people
I
death
do it to their back.
threats.
There's one coworker, man, I swear she just doesn't get it. And I do everything to try to teach her. Like, I've tried every mechanism. Right now I'm going through the process of, like, I won't answer her question, but I'll answer it with another question. And I'll try to make her solve it by her answering all her own questions. Like, lead her, because I've tried other ways and nothing works. And I know, I'm trying to help her so she doesn't get canned. She'll get canned because she's not cutting the mustard. But I'm trying to, like, do everything, and sometimes I know she gets mad at me, but I like, okay, let's read this. Let's read this error log. What does it say? And I know she thinks I'm talking down to her, but I'm not. I really am not. I'm trying to protect her from getting fired. And I'm not talking down to her. I'm trying to teach her like you would a kid in school now, because the other mechanisms aren't working. So I'm kind of like saying, well, let's look at the error log. And I know she gets mad. I could tell by her eyes. Like, I can read people. So, but.
So teach a man to fish.
Yeah. I'm trying to, like, she wants the answer, but if I keep giving her the answer and I'm not there, she's gonna fail. And I'm doing her work. I'm like, I don't want to do your work. I want you to do your work.
Yeah, and that's not even the type of talking about somebody I'm talking about. I mean, it's one thing to discuss somebody or discuss a coworker where it's relevant to work and stuff like that, but I'm talking about gossip, really. You know
Yeah,
what I
this
mean?
isn't
Just like,
gossip for me.
no, that's not gossip.
I just flat out go and tell her.
I mean, even telling me about it, but I'm talking about acting like a teenager, like talking about, oh, so and so, like talking about other people's
Yeah,
personal
yeah, yeah.
lives,
The
So,
person's lives, yeah.
yeah,
That
personal.
that's
It's none of their
everywhere where you
business.
go. But I bet you don't experience it anymore now, the way you're working now.
No. Thankfully not. That's I don't miss it.
You don't miss
So
anything
anyway.
about the going into the office anymore?
No. I mean, sometimes the socialization is nice. I mean, there's people that you like to talk to, every workplace you usually you have some people you get along with and whatnot, but
For me, it's a matter of productivity. I get too distracted at my own house.
Yeah, I can see that.
I mean, there's comics everywhere. I can't look anywhere, and I can't. I go because I want to be most productive, and that's where I am, away from all distractions. And when I'm working here, it's like, let Harley in, let her out, let her in, let her out, over and over. So I almost just sit by with my computer near the door. So I can just like slide it open, slide it.
Just be the doorman.
Yeah.
It all depends. But all right, well, you want to jump into some comics?
Sure. What are you doing, Harley? Why are you running like... She runs around the house. She gets the... When her pupils dilate, we're in trouble. She'll knock us over. She can blow out your knees. She just like has no concept of stopping.
She's ready to...
I've never seen a dog be able to dilate her own pupils. Once they get really big, I'm like, I better like step to the side here. She's going to blow out my knee.
She's ready to go wild.
Yeah.
Go run around crazy.
We call her crazy eyes every now and then. Because when she gets the cuckoo eyes, man.
Clear path.
Yeah, clear your path.
Get out the way.
It's dangerous when I get when I can sense the cuckoo eyes, and then there's family around the house. I'm like, Mom, don't come out of the room. Stay in the bathroom.
Yeah, I bet she could probably just knock your mom flying.
Oh yeah, she's 70 pounds. She almost weighs as much as my mom.
Jeez.
But she's not harmless. She's harmless. It's just that she's so strong.
Yeah, she's just going like my dog should. Every once in a while, she'll scratch me, but it's just because we're playing, and you know, she's not trying to scratch me or anything. Yeah.
I played a lot of sports in my life, like a lot, and I've torn a lot of hamstrings, but I haven't really hurt myself really bad, like. Hamstrings are probably the worst, or shoulders, but I could pop those back in. But Scooter, when we had Scooter, he blew out my knee chasing Risa around the yard. I was talking to the neighbor and wasn't paying attention to him, and he ran into my knee, which tore my meniscus in my knee, and I couldn't walk. I could walk, but without it trying to give way, you know, and I'll fall like for a month until I started rehabbing it and building up the strength in my knee. And I was lucky enough. I didn't have to, with the tears that I had, I didn't have to, you know, have surgery. Cause I was like at that borderline.
Yeah.
That's good. They tried therapy, physical therapy first, which I was glad it worked.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. All right, but let's talk some retro comic books.
All right.
Or whatever. Whatever you
retro
have.
Retro entertainment.
Yeah.
I have all comics.
Me too.
So you're accurate.
But I do want to do the Battlestar Galactica thing if you're up for it.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. I think it'll be fun.
Yeah, I'm curious about it.
I was listening to another podcast that was talking about it, and I guess I never realized that series had really good ratings, and its only reason for cancellation was the production costs. Like, it wasn't because of ratings. It costed $1 million back then, and that was a lot of money.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, I did watch a lot of Star Trek, and I'm not really going to talk about it at length, but I did.
You're probably done. With the
watch
series,
a lot. Yeah,
and now you're in the movies.
I watched, I finished the TV show. I watched about half the cartoons, and I will go back and watch them, but I was just getting really excited to get to the movies. I didn't want to wait anymore, so I watched the first four movies, and so the motion picture, Wrath of Khan, Search for Spock, and Voyage Home.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think I kind of fall on the consensus. None of them were bad to me, but I think the ones I would say, the motion picture and Search for Spock, would be a 3 out of 5. I still enjoyed
I
them.
Have never watched again the motion picture. I never saw it as an adult. So think about the year that the motion picture came out. 2 years after Star Wars. I went to go see Star Trek the motion picture.
Yeah.
And I was expecting a Star Wars in 1979, and I got V'ger. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? Who's this bald lady? <I'm> like, I hated it so much, I never revisited it. But I think now
I
that
can see that.
I understand it, I think I
Right.
get more. I'm more of an adult. I'm not. I'm like, what was I back then? 16, 17. I was 10 when I saw it at the theater, and I hated it.
Yeah, I
But when
can't.
I did see, I remember we used to go to a recreation, and I did see Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan. And as a kid, I don't remember the year on that. Do you remember the year of that?
No, but
It
there
was
was a
probably
decent
like
gap between the
three
two.
or 4 years after, maybe
Yeah.
five. But that one I really liked. So I saw that one maybe when I was 15 or 14, and I really liked Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, I can see that.
So Wrath of Khan is like the one that I the one that's up there really high for me is the next film you're going to watch.
The
Six.
fifth one? Oh no, no, I haven't watched the fifth one yet.
Which is the fifth one again? Oh, that's
Final Frontier. That's the one that.
I hold everybody hates that one, but I
Yeah.
freaking love it. It was one of the low budget ones. It was the one that if I remember correctly, William Shatner wrote. So what
Directed. That's the one he
directed?
directed.
Yeah, he directed. You get a lot of like banter between all of the characters that you and you know the characters very well now because you've watched
Yeah.
everything.
Yeah.
And I absolutely love it, and I love what they did with it. It's one of those films that you know is not held in high regard, but like when
Yeah.
it's on, I have to watch it. Like I can't turn the TV. So it's one of those ones like Superman 3. Like Superman 3 is not in high regard, but when it's on, I can't change the channel. I can't. So it's like one of those. But
Yeah.
number six, I absolutely like love. That could be my favorite Star Trek movie.
Yeah, that seems
I
pretty
even
well
bought the
regarded.
soundtrack. I loved it so much because it had a very, very distinctively different sound than the other ones.
Yeah, I mean, that's where they brought back the director of Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, that's probably why I liked
Yeah.
it. So like the ones that I hold in high regard are probably Wrath of Khan and Six. And I
Yeah.
enjoy Five a hell of a lot. The other
Yeah,
ones
I.
I enjoy, but I'm kind of with you. Like, you saw the whale one, right?
Yeah,
That
which
was
I
four.
like that one.
That one was good. I like Scotty talking into the mouse. Computer.
Yeah. It was definitely more of a comedy.
Yeah.
Because I had the history with those characters, I wouldn't have liked it as much if I hadn't watched the whole television show, but the interactions, I thought it was generally funny and interactions between the characters and just that whole fish out of water of them being in the present day was entertaining. And there really wasn't a villain, you know?
Yeah.
So it was kind of unconventional in that regard. But so that one was kind of a 4 out of 5, and Wrath of Khan was maybe a 5 out of 5, 4 out of 5. It was really, you know, it's entertaining. There's a reason it's more accessible. I mean, like you said, if I saw the motion picture when I was 10, I probably would have reacted the same way. You know, as someone in my
And
late
do you
30s.
remember the costumes were different? Like they were like drastically different from the TV
Yeah.
show.
Yeah, and then they were different. They kept changing them,
Well,
kind of.
the ones that were in the motion picture I hated. Like I still don't like them to this day. But
Yeah.
I like when Kirk's wearing the red jacket, you know, like when they get a little bit different. Like I dig that.
Yeah, they
So
brought in Wrath of Khan, they brought in more. That's where they started bringing more of a naval influence
yeah,
on
costume
everything.
design,
And
yeah.
I don't think, apparently Roddenberry didn't really like that, because it was more military-esque, but that was where he started to have a little less
The other thing
control.
you're gonna love about you're gonna see that some weird shit, man, when you got look forward to five is you're gonna see some like mind control things, and it's really, really bizarre, especially with Uhura and
Interesting.
Scotty. It's really interesting.
Yeah, I did start I did start watch. I've watched a little bit of Next Generation, because I could have. There's no reason you don't have to watch Next Generation in between, but technically, the show
You're
started.
watching them in order, yeah.
Yeah, which doesn't really matter, but it also helped kind of change things up, you know.
Oh, you started the TV show like right
Started
after
the Next
four?
Generation. Yeah,
Oh.
yeah. That's when Next
That
Generation
show I've
started.
tried to peek, I just can't get into it. And
Yeah,
I probably can't. I probably just need to get over that hurdle. Do you know what I mean? Like I just gotta get over like the first five, but I haven't made it at past three. And I know like when I was in college, like I would go to Barb's to study a lot, and her and Mark would be watching The Next Generation. Like it seemed like it was always on it, and I didn't give two shits about it. You know what I mean? I would just be in my books studying, but if it was something else on TV, I'd get distracted. I for me it was personally was just about the characters. Like there's like a different there's a different bond between the characters that are in the first generation than there is with the second generation. Like Kirk loves, in my opinion, Kirk loves his inner circle. Like he considers them like a family unit. Whereas Picard cares about his whole staff, and he's a little more thoughtful
Yeah, a
and
bit, yeah,
strategic.
definitely.
Yeah. Whereas Kirk is like, I've got my inner circle. I love my inner circle. And then everything else, I just need to get the job done.
Yeah,
If I
I'll have
was.
to see over time how it. Those are kind of my initial impressions too, but I'll have to see over time.
If I was on the crew, I would choose to be on Picard's crew because I think I would be better protected. Unless I was Kirk's, like, one of his inner circle. If I could be one of Kirk's inner circle, I would be with that staff. But if I was going to be, like, on an Enterprise, I would go with Picard's because I have a better chance for survival.
Yeah, it is probably kind of tough because I've found it interesting enough to watch, but it seems fairly universally held that the Next Generation doesn't start off very well, and that
Is that true? 'Cause I the people that I talk to just love Next Generation. Like I'm in the minority, I thought.
well.
You mean how it
People,
starts?
people,
Like how
right? Yeah, people love the show, but it seems like people love the show because of the later seasons.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it was on for 7 seasons, so the first couple don't seem like they're as highly regarded. I mean, I'm sure there's people that like them. There's people that like everything, but yeah, I mean, and it definitely there's been some good things. And there's been some good moments, but there's definitely some clinkers in there, and what you said is definitely true so far. I mean, I'm definitely not. I haven't clicked with the Next Generation cast. I have seen, I don't know how many episodes, and I don't know which ones, and I don't know if any of them will seem familiar to me as I go along, because I did sometimes watch it after school growing up. Because, like you said, it was in syndication right away, so it was on all the time, and so I do know these characters somewhat. But yeah, I don't click with them yet. And we'll see if I do. Except for Data, I like Data almost immediately, and I think he kind of already. He's right from the start. He's very Data.
Yeah.
Sometimes it takes characters to some a little while and actors to kind of click with their role and on TV shows, but Data's pretty good right off from the start.
Yeah, Barb loves that crew. I to tell you the truth, I don't know what she liked more, like Deep Space Nine or Next Generation, but I know those are her favorites. I don't even think she watched Voyager or the one that Enterprise.
Yeah, generally speaking, with Star Trek fans, it seems like Voyager and Enterprise weren't as popular. I am pretty curious and interested in Deep Space Nine, though, so We'll see when.
I like Deep Space Nine. To me, that was more like, I don't know. It was very different. Like, because they were on a space station, so
Right.
I
Yeah.
liked the. I like he's my second favorite captain. Sisko.
Yeah, I'm curious about that one because it is space station instead of the Enterprise, and well, we'll see. But yeah, I mean, but it's been interesting enough to keep me watching, and I think it is cool that they sort of changed things up with Picard, that he's very different than Kirk.
Yeah.
Just to kind of give you a different feel, just a different take. So the Star Trek watch continues.
Yeah, Barb has a lot of the toys too, the Playmates from Next Generation.
Oh, nice.
She even got into them when that show was on, so.
I saw some pops, the pop vinyls of the
Yeah.
crew. Oh, that reminds me. Today's an important anniversary.
What is the anniversary?
Today's the 1 year anniversary of Barb putting what's his face in the shower with you.
Oh no.
That was in my memories on Facebook. That was
I
1 year
call him
ago today.
his name Alcide, or whatever his name is from True Blood.
Yeah. Is that what the pop
Yeah,
is? Is that like from that show? Is it a True Blood
it's a
pop
True
or?
Blood one, yeah. He's shirtless because of he was a werewolf in True Blood. Yeah.
Okay. He's shirtless because he's always that guy's always
Well,
shirtless.
he's got abs, that's why.
Yeah. He's one of those people they just,
Yeah,
one of those
Barb got a big
guys.
kick out of that. I was going for my shampoo and I screamed. I went, ah!
Yeah.
I saw him there.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So,
He's
all
still
right.
in my, he's the one thing that shouldn't be in my display case, but he's in there. I'd rather have him in there closed than him showing up in different places.
At least you know where he's at.
Yeah, at least I know where he's at.
Yeah. All right, well, you want to kick things off or you want me to?
Either way, what do you want to do? All
You go ahead.
right. Well, I'll start off with something that I've wanted to revisit, but just never got around to it. But I started reading The Dark Horse Heroes again, which is Comics' Greatest Worlds. These were not even like full comics when they were released, but Dark Horse released them and they were like $1, I believe. They were really cheap. And they released the thing about the Dark Horse Heroes is they were released weekly and they were released by city. So you had like four characters that were introduced in each city and one writer that was launching it with several different artists. So the one city that I decided to read, and I think there were only 16 pages, but it's pretty good for a buck. 16 pages for a buck. Maybe it was 12 pages. It just doesn't even seem like a full comic. But the first one is X. The second one is Pit Bulls. Ghost is the third one, and Monster is number four. So if you look at like the success ratio of all the different cities in terms of comics published between when it was launched and now, X and Ghost are by far their most successful properties. And their third one was probably Barbed Wire, and she was in a different series, city. She wasn't in this Arcadia city. So Arcadia is like kind of like Gotham. I mean, if I had to compare it to any city, it looks like they got corruption in the police. They have a lot of politicians and stuff investing a lot of money into the waterfront to try to clean up the area, but they're doing it in a very dirty way. A matter of fact, at this point, you don't know Ghost's origin. Like, you don't know why she was killed and became a ghost, but you get implications of who killed her, It's just she doesn't know what the answer is at this point. So X is kind of like your Batman, if you will. He's attacking various places and beating up a lot of dudes, killing them. He has no problem with killing. This is the first appearance of X. It's in Comics Greatest Worlds, Arcadia, number one. Number three is the first appearance of Ghost. And then the other ones are their first appearances as well, but they're not, those characters never took off. So you have Lee Weeks, and Lee Weeks is currently drawing Lois and Clark, which is an amazing story by Dan Jurgens. He does the back scenes, and I still haven't figured out, like, I don't remember much about this. Like, the only thing I remember about Comics Greatest Worlds are X and Ghost. That's it. And barbed wire, the three I mentioned. Everything else is like a really vague memory. And I didn't remember much of the relaunch. The thing I really didn't remember is that each one of these books starts off with discussing the past about a spaceship that landed and like embedded itself underground. And I don't know what it has to do with anything right now, other than there's two aliens that are following around these characters throughout the city as the adventure goes on, and they're not even saying what their mission is other than watching right now. But I would imagine there's some link to that ship that landed in the 40s. So X is busting up. He kills somebody. At least we think he kills somebody, and then the police are after him, and that's pretty much issue one. They're just chasing him down, and he's fighting the police. And you get a snippet that the police are corrupt, and they bring in the politicians bring in the SWAT team, and the police don't like the SWAT team. And I don't know what the friction is between the two organizations, but SWAT doesn't like the police, and police don't like SWAT. And matter of fact, the SWAT team takes ownership of tracking down X. And they tell the police officer to stand down, and that pisses him off. So that leads us into the second book, is that head police guy, that detective, is really pissed off, and he contacts these mercenaries called the Pit Bulls. And they seem like they're just a bunch of badass, like MMA fighters with a lot of guns. So he sends the Pit Bulls after him, and they squabble for a bit, but then the SWAT team comes and it kind of dissipates both of them, and then you don't see any more of the Pit Bulls. And then X is the main thread throughout this, as he goes after another bad guy that's putting up buildings in the waterfront. He basically wants to bring everybody down, everybody that has anything to do with reconstructing the waterfront. And he actually wants to destroy the waterfront for whatever reason. And he goes there to just, there's a construction site. It's like Brad Street Construction. He goes after that person, and Ghost is there, and Ghost is after the same guy, but she's after the same guy for a different reason. That guy might be the only guy that knows why she was murdered, and she want before she kills him, like she wants to kill this guy too, but she's like, before I kill him, I want to talk to him. But X doesn't give her that opportunity. He kills her, and there's a big fight scene between Ghost and X. And the aliens, the interesting thing about the aliens in this book too is they figure out that Ghost can see them, and she actually kills one of the aliens who were watching. So she's really interesting, and that leads into X fighting Monster, and that Monster is kind of like Dark Horse's Sludge or Man-Thing or Swamp-Thing, you know? He comes out of the sewer and just fist fights with X. But it looks like he has some sentience about him, and he didn't want to attack X, but X attacked him. So there was a squabble there. And then it's to be continued, I think, in their own books, like X and Ghost. I think that's the way it worked. some of the artists that did this, like Chris Warner, I don't remember that name, but of all the artists that did this book, he drew X, and I liked his art the best. I think it just popped. It had a very realistic look to it, and it looked a lot like Bart Sears as far as structure, but a little less exaggerated. You know, Bart Sears was all about the muscles and stuff, right? I mean, he did like Brutes and Babes and Justice League Europe, and I mean, Captain Atom and Wonder Woman were so buff in that. But I really liked his art. The second artist was really good, Joe Phillips. But Adam Hughes did number three, which everybody knows Adam Hughes, and Derek Thompson did number four. So yeah, it was a lot of fun. I liked it. The next city, I think, is written by Barbara Kessel, and I remember not liking this one as much as I did Arcadia, because it's more like a futuristic city, and I didn't care for that at the times. But rereading it, we'll see what happens.
I never had any experience with the with that Dark Horse. What is it? Worlds? What do they usually call it?
Yeah,
World's
Comics
Greatest
Greatest World. Yeah.
Comics, Greatest World. But at one point, the Ghost Omnibus was the digital version was super cheap on Amazon. And I picked it up. I was just looking back at it because I was trying to remember what was in it and how much of it I read. And I just read the first issue that's in there, but it's 54 pages without ads, so it's a bigger, like double size basically. And it's I guess it was published originally as a Ghost special, and then that led it into her solo series. Because the Omnibus has Ghost special and then issues 1 through 12 of Ghost and issue 2 of a comic called A Decade of Dark Horse, which must have had someone's had a ghost story in there and stuff. But yeah, Adam Hughes, he doesn't do the pencil. A guy named Matt Haley does the pencils on the Ghost special, but he does pencils. He does the cover, and then I think he does pencils on at least some of the actual Ghost
Right,
series.
it's like 1 through 4, and then he drops off, I think, or something like that.
But I don't remember a ton about reading. I think I read it last year sometime, but it was pretty cool though. And X, flipping through X, does make an appearance in here. It's almost kind of an antagonistic, like she's pissed at him because
Yeah.
he killed somebody that she, like a witness that she needed or something.
That's exactly the one I was talking about. Their first meeting.
Well, it must recap it here then or something then.
Yeah, I
Yeah,
must
because it's
recap it.
kind of. Well, right, yeah. You're saying that she's referring to what you were just talking about, right? So yeah, I should read some more of this at some point. It's
I
interesting.
really like their omnibuses. That's how I read this. I have the individual issues. Not, I don't have the entire run, but I have like this and Will to Power, and then I think I dropped off when the new series launched. I like followed X and Ghost and Barbed Wire, and that was it. But I didn't stick with them. So, but there's something to be said about their omnibuses. They're not big. They're more in the manga, like kind of like size, but not quite. Maybe a little bigger than a manga. And they're really dense and thick. But the one thing I really like about them is they're small, they're easy to read. There's like not a, there's no gutter loss, you know? It's just a real dense packaged comic. I like it a lot.
Yeah, and they're affordable for purposes of catching up with something, catching up with the series, as opposed to being more of a collector item or something because it's so expensive, you know. But so they sort of take a little bit of a different approach there with their omnibus. Omnibi, Omnibu. All right, well, I have talked about Brave and the Bold 102 and 104 in the past, and it just so happened that I found issue 103 in a 50 cent bin yesterday.
Where at?
A place called, actually, you remember when Rob was on the show, he talked about a store called Dave and Adams.
Yeah.
It was there. They have this big section of 50 cent comics, and every once in a while they'll add a couple new long boxes of stuff, and I found this in there. I hadn't gone there for quite a while, but yesterday I stopped in there after I went out for some stuff that I needed. I stopped in there and looked around, just looked through a couple of boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, this one, I mean, it's not terrible condition.
Coffee. Yeah. Sorry, I have to point Barb to her coffee.
She didn't drink enough coffee to be able to find her coffee, huh?
Well, I bought her a coffee this morning.
Oh, that's a good husband.
Yeah, what a great man she has. He brought her breakfast and everything.
What a fantastic human being. almost as fantastic as my wife's husband. Anyway, now that we're done patting ourselves on the back.
Yeah.
So this was interesting because last night, so to back up, my wife said that Civil War looked interesting, that she'd go see it. And I said, well, I watched Winter Soldier and Avengers 2 by myself. I said, you might, from what I know about Civil War, you might want to see those first, at least Winter Soldier. Mm-hmm. I said, if you like Winter Soldier, I said, if you don't like Winter Soldier, then you probably, I'm
won't
guessing
like,
you probably won't
yeah.
like Civil War. So we could save, you could save the money of a ticket. So we watched Winter Soldier and she liked it. And then she brought home Avengers 2. I was like, well, that one probably isn't as necessary, but if you want to watch that one too, we can.
Well, the thing that I think it is necessary.
Okay. I still haven't seen Civil War, so.
But you've seen Avengers 2, correct?
Yes.
Here's why I'll tell you it's necessary, and I'm going to tell you it from a Avengers 2 standpoint, not from a Civil War because you haven't seen it.
Sure.
But what you see in Avengers 2 is a really big friction between Cap and Tony.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, it's between Tony and everyone at that time. Because
yeah,
Tony kind of wants to do his own thing, and the other guys are like, what the hell? You know, he wants to create this perfect utopia for people so he can retire. At least that's what he's trying to accomplish in Avengers 2.
Yep.
And because of it, he causes an awful lot of death. I mean, he is the creator of Ultron.
Mm-hmm.
So that builds on friction is built. What they established in that is they build on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was thinking about that because we watched the first hour and a half last night.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about that when we were watching it. Having Civil War in mind, I kind of noticed that. And that's actually one of the things I like about Avengers 2 is that the villain is actually created by one of the heroes. And I like some of the themes that
yeah.
brings up and stuff. So anyway, all that to say, so I had Avengers 2 on the brain. And it was interesting reading this because...
You need to watch Iron Man 3. My favorite Marvel film. No,
I'm not going to subject her to that. I don't hate that movie, but
I love that movie.
It's not high up on my list.
It's on nobody's except for mine. Well, there's only one other person. One of the No Apologies guys likes it as much as I do.
I have to see, though. I mean, some of them I'd have to rewatch if I really wanted to rank all of them. I feel like I'd have to rewatch some of them. The only ones I've seen twice, I've seen Avengers twice. I've seen Iron Man, the original, twice. And Now that I'm rewatching them with care, I've seen Winter Soldier and most of Avengers 2 twice, but
I think I've seen Iron Man 3 6 times.
oh my gosh.
And then I it, that that's from beginning to end. That doesn't
Yeah.
include all the times I drop in on it in the middle or the beginning. And then
Yeah.
Guardians of the Galaxy, I think I've seen a dozen.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'd watch that again. I mean, I kind of want to rewatch the ones I haven't and then sort of figure out, I don't know, just for the hell of it, sort of rank them, but I need to see Civil War. That's on the top of a lot of people's lists now, it seems like. So anyway, that's all to say that you need to watch Avengers 2 in order to understand this issue of Brave and the Bold. No, but it is funny. The reason I did bring that up for real is that this starts off with Batman at the Pentagon, and they have a device called John Doe. It's a robot computer, and it's that was submerged. They set off an atomic blast, and they sent this robot down a titanium shaft, and then they tapped a vein of molten magma, which surrounded the shield around the robot, and then they covered it back up in the desert. And it's like it's a big secret of the government, but they have brought Batman in because this John Doe has started to act weird. You know, he gave its creator is this guy named Cosgrove, and he gave John Doe human traits so that the people in at the Pentagon that were working and communicating with the robot would better be able to communicate with it. So I thought it was interesting because the whole purpose of putting this robot down here is to make a automated enemy missile detection and instant retaliation without any human error and stuff. So it almost kind of reminded me, it's more of a domestic defense, it sounds like, but it reminds me of Tony's goals with Ultron and the way that Ultron rebels. And this John Doe, he's more robotic looking, but he kind of has a similar attitude where his having a human personality sort of backfires. So the reason they call Batman in is because they want him to use his detective abilities to track down this Cosgrove who's gone missing, and he's kind of they feel like he's the only one that can interface with this creation and stop John Doe from destroying everyone, like setting off nukes and destroying humanity. So Batman starts doing his detective work. He tries to track down Cosgrove, and when he does eventually find Cosgrove, Cosgrove appears to have committed suicide. But he goes back to the Pentagon and accuses the robot John Doe of killing him. And this is kind of a convoluted explanation, but ultimately amounts to the robot playing John Doe this message that has mind control, like subsonic sounds that caused him to kill himself. So it's at this point that the issue's guest stars come in, which are the Metal Men. It's kind of interesting at this time, the Metal Men have all separated and are on their own because I'm not sure of the story where this comes from, but apparently they're Doc Magnus. Well, he says, Gold says that Doc Magnus became a puppet of a foreign dictator. And so Doc Magnus is missing, and the Metal Men have had to go on their own. And so Gold and Mercury go around and try to collect the other ones. Iron's working in a factory. Maybe this is where Tom King got the idea for Vision, because Tin is living in a neighborhood with a wife. And he's
You
like,
should tweet him. Did you get the idea from the vision from
I found where you stole your idea. You.
then you should tweet Marvel movies and say, I know where you stole the Age of Ultron from.
Yeah,
It really came
exactly.
from 103.
It all comes back to DC. But yeah, my wife and I have been ha ha happy together, fellas. But I'm tired of being the joke in this in the neighborhood.
Got the stuttering down there.
Yeah, that's 10 for you. But yeah, then Platinum is actually working at a go-go dancing club. Tina the Platinum Chick all night, every night. So Platinum's actually dancing for humans. So I don't know if she can
She's at a strip club.
a smoky discotheque is what they call it.
But we really know what the writer was thinking.
Yeah.
It was a strip club in his mind.
So I wonder if she just but if she bothers to pretend to take off her clothes or if she just reforms her body into
Nude.
nudity.
Okay, now I'm gonna reform my nipples. There, now you can see them.
Yeah. So but yeah, they so there's this robot's lib speech. This robot is talking about, robots' rights and how they shouldn't be slaves of mankind. And so the metal men kind of get into it a little bit, but and Batman tracks them down there, because he wants their help with John Doe, and he shows them a last will and testament of Doc Magnus. Even though they say, well, we don't know that he's dead. He said, well, even though, this is his wishes. And so, of course, Doc Magnus tells them, there's probably going to become a time where you are distrustful of humanity because there's a lot of evil humans, but you should still work to, even though I'm not around, you should still work to protect them. So that convinces them. And they go back with Batman to the site of where John Doe was put in, and they send them down because, as robots, they're thinking, well, they can get through the magma layer, hopefully. But when they get down there, it seems like they're converted over and in favor of robots' lib. So Batman's got to figure out a way to get in there himself. And there's this kind of long explanation of bats nearby that are acting weird, and he traces the bats to a cave, and he, detects radioactivity there, and it means that that there's some kind of crack they didn't expect, that the magma is seeping down into that cave. So he turns out to be right, and he's able to follow through the cave and find a opening into the outer casing. But just as he gets there, he passes out, and but fortunately the metal men hear him banging on the outside of the casing and cut it open to let him inside. It turns out, of course, they weren't traitors, that Tin actually slipped through this force field, or through a door that's guarded by lasers. He slipped through accidentally, and now he's stuck in a force field, and John Doe is holding him prisoner. Basically, if the metal men don't do what he says, he's gonna basically annihilate Tin. So from there, it's just a matter of Metal Man and Batman teaming up to try to take him down, try to take down John Doe. They basically do that by wiping out his memory banks, but they aren't able to completely defeat him. And so John Doe, they wipe out his current programming and stuff, but he goes to a backup. And his memory banks that turns out to be Cosgrove's own personality, but that's its downfall because bringing in Cosgrove's personality also includes Cosgrove's intentions prior to being killed, that to destroy John Doe because he realized it was too powerful. So John Doe's ends up instigating self-destruct techniques. and takes itself out. But it's kind of funny because the military has an atomic bomb poised over top of the shaft down there, and they're about to let it off, and they get out just in time to stop them from setting off the atomic bomb, because Batman tells them when he goes in, if you don't hear from me in 3 hours, then I didn't make it. And so it's almost 3 hours, and they're almost gonna set off an atomic bomb down there, which wouldn't have been too good for Batman. But it is a pretty entertaining issue. I was amused by the connections. I've already talked the unintentional connections I already talked about, but it's a little unsatisfying that ultimately it isn't Batman and Metal Men, but the robot itself that takes itself out. Kind of, they don't really have much agency there, but it has an amusing ending where Platinum calls Batman out for calling them Metal Men. Says it's Metal Men and Miss Batman, you male chauvinist. But this was written by Bob Haney as usual, but I don't know if so he was just a guest or not, but the art was by Bob Brown with Frank McLaughlin, as opposed to what's his face?
I always loved Platinum because she had a love for Doc Magnus.
Yeah,
Like,
that plays
it
in
was
here
very
too.
weird, yes.
Yeah, she's the least to be convinced that humanity is wrong because of that love for Doc Magnus. She says, "Well, I know some humans are good because of the doctor." And yeah, there's something sexy about her, and it's kind of weird that
Yeah, it's weird to
to know
say
that
that,
she's all made out of metal.
yeah. She reminds me of that black and white silent film, Metropolis, for some reason.
Oh, right, because
Yeah.
there's that prominent sort of
Yeah.
female robot figure.
Yeah, and I've always liked Mercury too, because he's the hothead.
Yeah.
They all have distinctively what do you call it? Personalities.
Right. Yeah, to kind of, yeah, I've always liked that, and it kind of goes with their metal,
Yeah.
qualities of their metal, iron. When they find him, he's just working in a factory with isotopes, and
Yeah,
they're like,
he's the big
he's the
guy,
dumb,
right? He's
he's the big guy, and he's kind
the
of dumb.
muscle.
He's like, yeah,
Yeah.
he's just happy to be working in a factory, and he's like, oh, okay, I guess I'll go along with you guys, but I'm fine. I don't really care.
And Lead is the timid one, the shy stuttering, or is that what he is?
Tin.
Yeah, ten.
Yeah, actually,
Sorry.
Lead. I think Lead's the one that's the dumbest, right? Because dumb as lead.
Yeah. And Gold is the boisty, arrogant one.
Yeah, because gold's pr such a
Yeah.
precious. They always and I like they always talk about their melting points. Yeah, it's.
The responsimeters. That'll be all that's left if they melted, I think.
Yeah. So yeah, iron. Okay, I got confused because iron and lead are both working, but iron's working a 24-hour shift in an auto graveyard, and then lead is tending to isotopes. Radioactive Mercury says radioactivity doesn't affect him with his dull brain. I mean, responsimeter. What other work could he get?
Yeah, they're an interesting bunch.
Yeah.
I don't own much of that series.
No, I just have a few.
Yeah. I do like what they're doing with them, though. I don't know if you tried them yet in what is it called? Legends of Tomorrow?
No, I haven't read any of that. I saw them when they were in Justice League, but.
Yeah, they had the backup in Justice League, and before that, they had the Wednesday's comics in the newspaper. And now they have Legends of Tomorrow, and it was really, really good. It was my favorite of the four. I didn't expect it to be my favorite. I expected Firestorm was going to be my favorite. And it was Metal Man by a long shot.
Yeah, and then what are the other two? Is it Swamp Thing one
Swamp,
of them?
no, Swamp Thing has his own series
That's
now.
its own thing. Okay.
Yeah, let me think. Oh, it's Sugar and
Oh,
Spike,
right.
which is very, very different than the Sugar and Spike you see in the 70s,
Yeah, I imagine it
which
probably.
is
I
more like a,
figured it would be.
to me, in the 70s and 60s, they were more of a Sunday funny, you know, kind of thing. Yeah. But they're like detectives, or you know, private eyes for hire kind of thing. And Metamorpho.
Metamorpho, okay.
Yeah. And the way I would rank the stories, which this is just me, and you could tell from Iron Man 3 that I'm very different, but I liked Metal Man the best, and then Metamorpho, and then Sugar and Spike, and then Firestorm. And Firestorm was the one I thought I'd like the most.
Yeah, because
So,
Jerry Conway's back, right?
yeah,
In that, yeah.
that's why I thought I would like it the most. Yeah. But yeah, Brave and the Bold. I have the whole run of that thing going back to issue 58 continuously, with
Nice.
one exception. I'm missing 83, which is Batman and the Teen Titans drawn by Neil Adams. Yeah. You
Yeah,
probably read that one.
I read it. Yeah, I don't own
Yeah.
a paper copy though.
And then I'm only missing 55 through 57. I still need to get the first appearance of Metamorpho. And then I have almost everything up from 50. And then I have sporadic ones. I think my earliest issue of Brave and the Bold is 25, which is the first appearance of Suicide Squad.
Yeah, I mean, I have sporadic ones in general.
The one I don't think I will ever have is number 28, the
Yeah.
first appearance of the Justice League.
Yeah, that'll be a tough one.
I have the first appearance of the Titans,
Yeah. That's a pretty
but
good one.
yeah, I hope to get the rest, especially the Suicide Squad, because I love them so much, even though they're the Suicide Squad then. Very, very, very different than the Suicide Squad now.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, the one right before this 102 is the oldest one I have, which I picked that one up for Kid to Flash, because that's a Teen Titans one. But
A lot of first appearances in this series.
yeah, especially early on, that's kind of what it was for before it became Batman Team Up.
Yeah.
It's
All
got a
right.
Columbia House ad as the centerfold of this issue. Any 14 hit records for only 286.
Did you ever belong to Columbia House?
I did, yeah.
I
Not for
did. I did
records,
too, and I loved it.
CDs.
Oh, well, CDs.
Yeah.
For me it was 8 tracks.
Nice.
I had a huge collection of 8 tracks. That's where I got like my Van Halen Fair Warning and AC/DC and all kinds of stuff. Barb's watching a robin in the bath while the squirrel is going nuts. And Harley's watching, of course, because she doesn't like no robins. That's interesting. That squirrel is going, his tail's freaking out. And the
That's
robin doesn't care. It's, Barb sit here and watch. That's why I have to get comics off the damn table. That's why the comics end up on the stove. And that's why
That's not a good place.
that was a really popular episode, by the way, of Geek Brunch, where I talked about my comics on the stove. Had the most feedback I think I've ever gotten.
That's funny. That's
All
not a
right,
good
so
place.
yeah.
Not a good place for paper, the stove. Do you have electric or gas stove?
It's electric.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a little safer, but
It's a
still.
flat surface.
Yeah.
As long as Barb doesn't turn on the stove.
Yeah. We have gas, so
Burn
that would.
them.
We have open flames, so that would be kind of
Yeah.
bad.
So the next book I'm going to talk about was written by Ron Mars and art by Igor Corday. And I've heard that guy's name before. And he's really, really good.
Oh yeah, didn't was that the guy that did fill-ins on the new X-Men when Grant Morrison was writing it?
I think
Or is
he
that a
did.
different dude? Yeah.
I think he did.
Yeah.
This came from Dark Horse in DC, but it was mostly a Dark Horse release. And it was September of 1999. It was Batman Tarzan, The Claws of the Catwoman.
Oh,
So we have two great pulp characters, and Bruce Wayne is heading out to like a museum fundraiser. He just dedicated a wing dedicated to his mom and father. And he has like a hunter bringing over, or this guy in Africa is bringing over like a lot of displays. He's paying this guy to do it, and his name is Finnegan Dent. And Bruce is funding him for all his trips to Africa, and he finds out that this Finnegan Dent might not be legit because Tarzan actually shows up at the display, and he's not even here because of Finnegan. He's here just to see the display and meet Bruce Wayne. And at this time, he's Lord Greystoke. You know, he's very he's in a suit and everything, and Tarzan is saying, you know, I think we have a lot in common, blah blah blah. And they're talking about the displays, and he said, yeah, this is a place in Africa, this display. And he's enjoying the museum, but he doesn't know that Finnegan might not be legit. And then there's this Catwoman character. Well, she's from Africa. She's not Selina Kyle. And she breaks in to steal this cat piece. And it is really from her tribe. And Finnegan has been stealing from her tribe. And that involves Batman and Tarzan to get involved. And it looks like they're getting attacked at the end of it. When they're trying to talk to Catwoman, they're going to let her take the piece back to her family, and they get attacked by a bunch of guys with spears and arrows, and it looks like Finnegan might be bringing some people against him. But they look like they might be from Africa, so who knows? Or either that. Or it's another tribe that Finnegan stole from, and they're just coming to get their peace back, just like Catwoman was. So yeah, it was a really interesting book. I just picked this up recently at the comic shop because I didn't own it. I've been trying to fill all my Batman holes, and I thought it was an interesting team up because like one of the movies I'm really looking forward to this summer is the new Tarzan movie. I'm like a Tarzan fan when it comes to comics, and I read like all the Dynamite stuff and I read the Dark Horse, a lot of the Dark Horse stuff back in the day. And before that, I think Malibu had the property while they were doing what was it? Ultraverse. But they were not doing it under the Ultraverse line. It was just under the Malibu line. So like I follow Tarzan. I like Tarzan, and I'm looking forward to the movie, and that's why I picked this up.
Cool.
And
So is there
Igor
more than one issue of
Corday,
that?
yeah, there's four.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a 4-issue miniseries. It ends on that cliffhanger where this other tribe is like attacking Tarzan, Catwoman, and Batman. And at this point, Tarzan is in his lion cloth. So as soon as they knew somebody was stealing the piece, Batman went after Catwoman, and then Tarzan got involved. And he knew immediately that he was Bruce Wayne because he go Tarzan when they get like in this little like 2-second tussle where they're like fighting, and as soon as Tarzan was fighting, he goes, "Bruce Wayne?" And he goes, "How did you know?" And he goes, you disguise it well with the posture of the voice, but you can't disguise your scent." I like it.
You know, Bruce went home that day and figured out a way to disguise his scent.
Well, that's
He's like,
exactly
oh yeah.
that's the yeah that fool me once, you're not gonna do it again. He learns from everything.
Right.
So, like, if you say, "Hey, I know what you smell like," he's gonna say, "Now you're not."
Yeah, it's time for a new bat suit.
Yeah.
With.
I gotta stop showering.
Scent. Well, that'll make it worse, probably.
Yeah, but then he'll think.
Tarzan smell him coming from. Jungles away.
But he'd never suspect it's Bruce Wayne. If he's all stinky.
Who's that stinky dude?
Yeah, but no, he's probably actually detecting at that level. You know what I mean? It's not the fact that he's picking up the deodorants or whatever that Bruce Wayne's wearing. He's
Right.
probably smelling his sweat.
His
He knows
actual,
it.
yeah.
He knows it distinctively is that smell.
Right. Yeah.
And then he was like picking things out of his hair. No, I'm just kidding. And eating
like,
them.
What's that? That looks good. Tasty.
Yeah, but it was a fun series. I picked up all four, and I picked up another series called Batman and Toyman. That's an odd. I didn't even know that existed, because Toyman's a Superman villain.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. Well, yeah, one's a crossover. So that is also a miniseries, Batman Toyman, or.
Yeah, that's a 4-issue miniseries too.
Interesting.
That's amazing what you could find just going through boxes of comics.
Yeah, that's why sometimes I like looking through, because it's not even anything I want to buy, but you just stuff that you didn't even realize existed, you know. You see things that just, oh, I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah.
All right, well, actually connecting back to Avengers 2 again and that being on my mind, I thought, you know, I don't think I've ever read
You're going to
first.
write another DC comic
Right.
because
I say, I wonder what comic, DC comic, they stole Ultron from. No, I thought that I didn't think I ever read the first appearance of Ultron. So I thought I'd see what that was and go back and read that. You didn't talk about this before, have you? I forgot to check
No,
this one.
no. I don't know if I've even read the first appearance of Ultron, to be honest.
Well, it's.
Waiting to see what issue you say it is.
Well, apparently there's a. The cameo is Avengers 54.
Uh-huh.
And the first official appearance is Avengers 55. So I read both of them, and so I'll talk about them a little bit more on a macro level. But these.
I do own them, but I didn't read them. I know I didn't read these.
Yeah, these are in the Roy Thomas written period, and John Buscema is the penciler. And actually, 54 is more of a Masters of Evil. That's kind of how Ultron comes in, actually, is the Masters of Evil initially. And right now, at least in these issues, the team is Black Panther, Hawkeye, you have Wasp, and Hank Pym as Giant Man. And it starts off actually with Hank Pym is working on new defenses for Avengers Mansion. And Jarvis is acting kind of strange. Janet goes out for a walk, and for some reason her chauffeur, Charles, doesn't show up. So she goes for a walk instead. And Jarvis, meanwhile, we see him go downtown and to a secret passage in a condemned building, and he meets up with a bunch of supervillains going as the Masters of Evil, which, you know, the membership of that group has changed so many times. But in this case, we have Claw, Whirlwind, the Melter, the Black Knight, and Radioactive Man. And they are being led by a new figure that is calling himself the Crimson Cowl, which is just basically a figure that's all in crimson with a cowl and a cape and can't see its face beneath. Its identity is a mystery. But Jarvis, surprisingly, is actually there to give them details on these new systems that Hank Pym is installing. And we kind of, there's a bit of recap for people who aren't familiar with these villains. You have Claw talks about his background and how he got recruited. Radioactive Man talks about his background. And Melter just kind of says, yeah, I got recruited too. Thanks for breaking me out of prison. But Whirlwind, his thoughts reveal to us that the reason that Janet's chauffeur didn't show up is that actually her chauffeur is the Whirlwind. And I am not really sure if he's impersonating the real Whirlwind or if he is the Whirlwind from these stories, but his intentions seem to help to be secretly helping out the Avengers, but it's kind of unclear from just jumping into these two issues. So even though Jarvis helped them out, they're bad guys, so they knock him out with some gas anyways. Well, the Black Knight, there's a lot of stuff going on this team, because the Black Knight is actually not the old villainous Black Knight, but it is the nephew who has inherited his uncle's stuff and is inclined to be a hero. So he's taken the opportunity to work from within. But unfortunately, he's discovered pretty quickly by the rest of them, and they set a trap for him. And but he's able to escape the rest of them. And it's enough that it's a little bit of a warning for Hawkeye. Hawkeye on the monitors inside sees the Black Knight's horse. So, but that doesn't do him too much good, because, like I said, they have the plans for the new security system. So they sort of break in individually so that we have kind of a bunch of different one-on-one battles, or, and it's kind of a switcheroo with Whirlwind going after Black Panther and Melter going after Iron Man, or Melter's an Iron Man villain, but he goes after Hawkeye. The Claw breaks into the Wasp's room, and Radioactive Man comes down and goes after Hank Pym, and all of them pretty much get taken out by the villains, and they're perpetrating the Crimson Cowl's plan. Most of them, they're there pretty much to get revenge on the Avengers, but the Cowl has something more in mind. And as issue 54 ends, the Crimson Cowl is on the monitor and the Avengers headquarters, but the villains are using it to communicate with him. And he goes to reveal his identity, but another Crimson Cowl comes out from behind the one that's seated there. And the other Crimson Cowl unmasks the first one, and they see a robot. So, well, who's the one that just unmasked this robot? And those of us, you know, reading it today, we recognize this robot to look like Ultron. But the other Crimson Cowl reveals it himself to be Jarvis. They say, oh my God, is Jarvis a criminal mastermind? But if we go into issue 55, again by Roy Thomas and John Buscema, the villains that they captured last time, except for the Wasp, or rather the heroes, they're trapped in this vehicle that they're driving. And they got them in this spot where if they move, they'll be hit by these lasers. But like I said, there's some infighting with the villains, because Most of them just want revenge, and the Crimson Cowl has something else going on. Who they think now at this point, even the villains they think is Jarvis, and they're a little confused because they're not generally all that impressed with Jarvis as a person. But Giant Man's able to break out of this trap situation that they have in because something about his cellular structure. As a giant, he's able to still use his power and break off of the restraints by growing. So that causes some chaos, but they're able to restrain him
Do you
again.
hear a weird noise every now and then that goes woof or like that? Okay.
No,
I'm
I
just
don't think
hearing
so.
it. Sounds like I'm getting some kind of weird feedback.
Is it loud or?
No, it's very subtle.
Maybe I missed it because I was talking, but
No, keep going.
okay. Well, ultimately, the Avengers all get free and regroup, of course. But then, interestingly, when they confront the Crimson Cowl, well, it's actually as the Avengers are narrowing in on the group, the Crimson Cowl and the rest of the Masters of Evil are discussing, and Crimson Cowl reveals Jarvis to be under his hypnotic spell. So, like, whoa, I thought you were Jarvis, and but it turns out that Jarvis, he come once he's out of the spell that the Crimson Cowl has him under, said, "Please kill me if you must. But spare the Avengers. You must let them live in the name of all that is human." And the Crimson Cowl says, "Human dolt, did you say human?" And then he pulls back his hood, and it actually is the robot that was supposed to be the fake one. And it says, "What makes you think that I am human?" And he says, "Yes, you mortal moron." And he introduces himself as Ultron 5, the living automaton. And smashes Jarvis in the face, knocks him out. And so the melter causes a bunch of rubble and stuff to fall on Jarvis, and they leave him for dead. But he actually manages to crawl out of the rubble and just kind of starts wandering down the New York City streets. And people think he's a bum looking for handouts. No one will help him. So he's just kind of wandering. Fortunately for him, he wanders close enough to Avengers Mansion. He doesn't realize how close he is, and this new Black Knight, who's a good guy, actually finds him and takes him back to Avengers Mansion. And Black Knight starts assisting from the outside, makes an attack on the villains, and actually helps the other Avengers get free and join the battle. And all of this, Ultron is actually watching from a distance on monitors, and just is frustrated by the human villains that he's teamed up with. So ultimately, obviously, the Avengers get the best of the rest of the Masters of Evil. They rescue Jarvis, and Jarvis is ready to basically be turned into the police, because he did actually turn in the plans of his own will. It was because he doesn't have enough money to pay for his ill mother's medical treatments, and the only way he allowed himself to do it morally was just to tell himself that the Avengers were more powerful and would survive anything that happened. But in the process of everything that's going on, he's actually sort of saved their lives, so they're giving him a second chance, and it kind of washes out. And the Black Knight disappears. So they're not really sure what the deal with him is and why he assisted them. And the last panel is Ultron vowing, even though they eluded him this time, they shall die by the hand of Ultron 5. So readers at the time would have been kind of left wondering where this robot came from, and it looks like the next issue doesn't address it, but then apparently issues 57, 58 are where it goes into the flashbacks and reveals like how Ultron had been created and how he wiped Hank Pym's memory and that kind of thing.
That's the
So
key right there, right?
yeah, and I expect it to
Wiping
kind of
his memory.
right, yeah, to explain kind of why he didn't recognize him right away.
Yeah.
But so I expected that was what I was going to get from here. And I mean, I kind of vaguely remember now that the Ultron first appeared as Crimson Cowl, but once I was actually reading it. But so I might go on to read those other ones too, because that's kind of what I was expecting to see. But I always like seeing these like Whirlwind, Trapster, and stuff. I always like in Claw. I always thought Claw.
Wasn't Radioactive Man on the cover too?
Radioactive Man, yeah.
See, that used to be my handle back in the day on Bullpen Bulletins,
Oh, yeah.
because I used to love Radioactive Man.
Okay.
I just love that character. Matter of fact, I threw. You know how I'm like so whiny. I hate like whiny people.
Right.
I was one of those one time for Radioactive Man, because Radioactive Man was on the Thunderbolts, and he's from China, and the when Reginald Hudlund came with Black Panther number one, this is fairly recent. This is like the incarnation after Christopher Priest wrote it, then Reginald Hudlund wrote it,
All right.
and it was a good run, but he made Radioactive Man Russian. And it just like threw me in this loop. I'm like, who's this guy? Where did they come from?
That's not my radioactive
That's not
man.
my radioactive man. Oh my
Reginald Hudlund
God.
should die.
It threw me
Jeez.
for a really loop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny. I always like the
Man, there's
Claw.
two Radioactive Man. You like Claw, the Black Panther villain? That's the one I
Yeah,
know
I
him from.
guess. Yeah, that's what they kind of recaps here is how he's connected to the Black Panther. I mean, I didn't realize it at the
Wakanda,
time.
yeah.
Yeah, because it was just he was in a issue. One of my earliest comics I had was an issue of Daredevil, where he came in there.
Did you notice in Avengers Age of Ultron that they had the Claw? They had Ulysses, what the his alias.
Oh no, I didn't catch
He's
that.
in there on the ship, yeah,
Okay.
on the boat. So they introduce him,
That's cool.
believe it or not. And there's your link of the Wakandian because they're looking for the vibranium,
Right,
remember?
the vibranium,
Yeah, so they have him in there. He's just not the Claw yet.
yeah. Right. Yeah, that's cool.
Yep. So yeah, I like love Black Panther. Like I've said this a couple times, but he's my second favorite Marvel character. And that new guy that's writing it, he's nailed it. Like I've heard other podcasters not like it,
Oh, really?
but the thing that is Black Panther is the culture, the Wakanda, and then the characters and the leadership. And it's got a lot of political intrigue.
That's cool.
And it used to have a lot of, it had a little bit, a very little bit when Priest was writing it, of humor, because they had a UN guy that was assigned to it, Ross something or another, and he was like the comedic relief, if you will, because he was an idiot. But really good series. I love the character, and my favorite part of the movie that if you decide to go see it is Black Panther.
Yeah.
The actor nailed it. At least like what I envision the character to be, majestic, you know, like
Yeah.
and his father majestic and stuff like that. It just and a true leader. and thinking, you know, the way they think things through and very intelligent. This guy nailed it. Nailed it.
Yeah, I saw that actor in the where he played Jackie Robinson. He
I
was
didn't
good
see
in
that
that.
movie.
Yeah, that
Yeah.
was good. 42, I think. But and I watched how Chelsea Handler, you know, she has a new show on Netflix. And I watched the first episode of that because she had that actor on there as her guest. It was all about like super, it was all about kind of like connected to Civil War because the other segment was where she was having dinner with bad with actors' names, but it was, so I'll just call them by their characters, but she was having actor, she was having dinner with Captain America, Agent 13, Bucky, and Crossbones, and so that was pretty entertaining and
Chris
interesting.
Evans is one
Chris
of them.
Evans, yeah. Chris Evans, yeah, that one I do know.
I don't
Although
know
I
the
was,
Agent 13. Who's the girl that was Agent 13? Shannon Carter, Barb, the actress, the blonde. Van Camp. What was she
oh
in? Oh,
yeah,
you told
Emily
me
Van
the
Camp.
show. What?
Revenge.
Revenge. That's why I knew it because
Oh right, she was the
Barb
lead.
loved Revenge. So I
That's
know
right.
that from
Yeah.
then. I didn't even know, but I. Revenge was a show that Barb loved, and every time I was reading comics, it's always seemed to be in the background when I was.
I
So.
know. Well, we got almost all of them then, because I know Crossbones is Frank Grillo,
Yeah.
because she Chelsea loves that guy apparently. Like, and she kept, so she kept saying his name and joking around with them. And he tells his story, not to get totally sidetracked, but he, like, I don't know if you've seen pictures where that dude, he's like 50 something. And he's like super ripped, you know.
Yeah.
He's in really good shape, so you wouldn't think like you'd hear the story, but he's like, sounds like a really crazy dude. He tells this story because Chelsea really wants him to tell the story, where he was like on this all day drinking binge, and he didn't have anything to eat, and because I guess because he didn't eat anything and he drank all day, he went back to his hotel room and passed up, and then he woke up and he just like was throwing up blood all over his hotel room.
Wow.
So it looked like somebody got murdered in there. It was like blood everywhere. And then,
You could do that from over drinking?
yeah, I
Oh,
think you
wow.
like, you do something with your stomach lining or whatever.
Oh, wow.
That's where the blood comes from, I think.
Yeah. It's the first time I've heard of it.
And there wasn't any like food to absorb the alcohol, you know? And it was so bad that they had to like take him out on a stretcher that was a vertical. Like he said he felt like Hannibal Lecter or something, like, but they didn't want him to like be flat on his back in case he threw up some more, you know? And so they have him in like the hotel lobby. And he's like covered in his own blood, and like he's like, hopefully, you know, he said something like, hopefully, you know, no one will see me or whatever. And they're like, you're in the middle of a hotel lobby covered in your own blood. You don't think anyone's gonna notice you? And yeah, it was just insane. I was like, man, this dude is fucking crazy.
He was good as Crossbones, so.
Yeah. But I did, the bad thing about watching that was finding out that Chris Evans is like a huge Tom Brady fan.
Oh, Lord.
I know, I was really disappointed, so I'm like, yeah, figures. I knew, so I knew that whole Hydra thing was coming. So I was like, that figures.
Hail Hydra, man. It's gotta be, because Brady's in Hydra.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, but yeah, these Avengers issues were cool. I like, once, I don't know, one, I love just the different eras and the different team members, and I like
Yeah.
John Buscema's art is really good on these, and you know, it's just cool that like there's no Iron Man, Thor, or Captain America in these 2 issues.
Some of their best lineups were when they were different, you know?
Yeah.
Like, my favorite lineup was Quicksilver, Cap, Captain. I mean, it was Captain America, Quicksilver, Scarlet Witch, and Hawkeye. You know, it was like
Right, yeah.
Cap mentoring villains.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, it
And then
was.
you had Hank Pym on the background, and you know, a couple others, but Yeah, they've had some interesting lineups. I like when they change the lineups. The one lineup that I can't get into, but it's got like all the great writers that you think I'd be able to get up into, is the all new, all different Avengers. It has characters I like. It has creative team that I love, and it's just not clicking with me. And I'm not the only one because I've been reading the letters pages. And man, there's just people half and half, you know? And there's one guy that said, man, this book is missing something. It's missing characterization and a solid story. And I kind of feel that way. It's
That's
weird because you have Alex Ross covers, you have Mark Waid, you have Ashwar, I can't pronounce his name, on art, which he's a really good artist. And it's not bad. Like, you don't walk away from it and hate it, but you're like, man,
Right.
something's missing. There's something missing.
Yeah, I've only read issue number one, because it just got added to Marvel Unlimited, but I was really looking forward to it. I was really excited about it, and because I love Mark Waid, and like you
So
said,
do
that.
I. I like love Mark Waid. Matter of fact, there was one letter that nailed it because I kind of feel this way. He said, I have loved everything Mark Waid has done that I have read. And he said, this is the first thing I didn't. I mean, he says, I don't hate it, but it's just there. And I was like, wow, I feel the exact same way.
I didn't know that. I was kind of hoping the rest of the run would be different, but when I read issue one, it wasn't bad. It was like a 3 out of 5, but I was like, I expected it to be a 5 out of 5. I was like, oh,
Yeah, so did I. I expected
that
it
wasn't as good.
to knock my socks off. The thing I the there's two things I like. I like what he's doing with Thor and Captain America. He's like building a relationship between the two. And the other thing I like about it is some of the villains. Like you were talking about these Avengers books, you know how some it had some of those villains that you kind of like, and they're kind of like C-listers. He's been doing that, so
That's cool.
I kind of like the spotlights, even though they're not like the spotlight villain. They're showing up there. Do you know what I mean? And you're like, wow, I haven't seen that guy in forever. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
That's cool.
Well, I have Blue Devil number one. I think you covered this, but not number one. I think you covered the 8-page first appearance, if I'm right, but I'm not sure.
That
I know
sounds correct,
I
yeah.
know you did a lot of the 8-page first appearance DC comics. You've covered at least four of them. I think Blue
Yeah, I know
Devil is one of them.
there was a time there where I was talking about a lot of them.
Yeah. So I read Blue Devil number one. This series I've held really fond. I have fond memories of it, and the reread I still liked it. I don't know if it's because I have so much fond memories of it, or if it's really that good. But I actually love it. It's by Gary Cohn, Dan Mishkin, and Paris Collins. I do like Paris Cullens a lot. Like, I like his art. He did like Blue Beetle, and he's done a lot, New Gods, and he's done a lot during this time period. This was like 1984, 1986. In the 80s, he had a lot of work with DC. He had a very distinctive style and something that was very recognizable. And the thing that I found recognizable is the way he drew eyeballs. They were really big. He drew him really big, so like you could like look at his art style and say, oh, that's Paris Collins. But this features it's not his first appearance, but it's kind of like his origin story. Dan Cassidy, who's a special effects guy, and he actually gets into the Blue Beetle suit for Hollywood to film these Blue Devil movies. And he's got a tough exoskeleton motors, and they give him strength, pyrotechnics. The costume has all this cool stuff, and it's like a horror film type thing he's filming. There's a producer there with her son. She calls her son Gopher. I believe the son goes on to many, many issues later to become Kid Devil. And he's featured prominently in the Teen Titans by Sean McKeever. So you have that link. He has a girlfriend who's an actress that's in this movie, but he's worried that she's falling in love with this other actor. He's like, she convinces this actor to take her into this pyramid. They're actually like on site filming somewhere, and it's got like this Aztec type pyramid. And she convinces the actor to just go mosey around the set, which is an actual, historical pyramid. And the actor doesn't care. He just wants to get in her pants. Like, she's even like hesitant to go in with him. She's like, I don't know if I should go. I've heard about what you did to the actress on this other set. But he convinces her, yeah, let's do this, let's do this. And he thinks he's gonna get some sex, but she has like no interest in him. I think she has some feelings for Dan, but Dan is jealous because he thinks this she has a thing for this actor. But she finds this like demonic gold artifact, and she plugs it into the wall, and that sets the demon Nubros loose. And it's really weird because the producer and director and all that stuff, as soon as Nubros is there, he's out to kill people. He comes out of the thing, he's out to kill people. The producer goes into Dan's place where he does the pyrotechnics and develops the suit and stuff, and Dan's there, and he says, I need you to get your suit on and fight this monster. It's a legitimately real demon. And the demon is chasing, I think her name is Sharon, I can't remember her name. He's chasing her because she's the one that freed him. And I don't know what he wants to do with her, but he wants to grab her, maybe reward her or eat her. I don't know what he wants to do with her. But he's chasing Sharon. Let's just call her Sharon for now because I can't remember the name, and I don't have the comic in front of me. But he's chasing her, and then he gets the suit on, and he ends up fighting this demon, and Nubros pretty much trashes him. Like he's able to do a little bit of fighting, but he's trashes him, and he blasts him with this thing from his eyes. And what it does, what he doesn't know what it does. But it like knocked him out, and it also fused him to his suit. Later on, he's like, "Oh fuck, I can't take off my suit. Everything feels organic now. It's like I can't get out of my suit." So he actually becomes Blue Devil, and he can't transform. So yeah, it was a really cool issue. I really dug the hell out of it, and it just like a lot of fun. It's like one of those characters that is very unique in origin story. Like
Yeah.
I can't think of a special effects superhero before that becomes a
No.
superhero by accident and doesn't even want to be a superhero.
Right.
But
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
yeah, he's very unique and interesting, and this is kind of his origin story. And the one thing also is it built a really good cast of characters, like supporting cast in like the first issue, and characters that are interesting and distinctively different and look different. Like there's even one guy, a black African American that works for that producer, and he actually kind of saves Dan. Like he distracts the attention away from Dan when he's getting ready to kill him. When he's in the Blue Devil costume, because he like rams a card into him and kind of saves him, and so he's developed character that you know is going to be a friend of his because he obviously cares for Dan or he wouldn't have risked his life fighting a demon for him. So yeah, it's pretty cool. I really liked it.
Yeah, I've read that issue. I can't remember how many more I do, but I do have all of that little run. And I need to read the rest of it because, like you said, it is fun, more, it's lighter tone,
Yeah.
you know.
And not run of the mill. It's different. Like
Different,
it's
yeah.
He doesn't even want to be a hero. He wants the actress.
Yeah.
And he wants to continue, like he loves his job. Like you could tell in the first issue, he loves being a special effects guy, you know? And he's got that suit pretty awesome because he could like lift huge boulders and stuff like that. And I think what happens is when he gets blasted, it also affects his trident because Blue Devil always carries a trident with him. And everything that it could do before, it did like just for studio effects, like pyrotechnics and other stuff. But it becomes a legitimate weapon where it actually does shoot fire and does do certain things. And he can fly with it. You know what I mean? So it. Whatever Nubros did, he even calls him brother because he thinks when he comes, he's freed. He's been imprisoned forever in this pyramid. When he's freed, he's like, "Oh, there's another demon in this world. We should team up." And he ends up fighting him, and it's pretty cool.
Nice.
What else you got?
So my last thing is again two related issues. I didn't going into it, unlike Avengers, where I knew the first issue was a cameo, so I'd probably be reading two. In this case, I didn't know I'd be reading two. I already had on Comixology, I guess in a sale or something, I'd picked up Action Comics 555, 555. Which has Supergirl on the cover and Parasite behind them. It says it's celebrating the anniversary of Supergirl. It's called Reunion. It's by Paul Kupperberg and Kurt Swan. And so Supergirl actually doesn't make all that many appearances in the issue. It starts off with Parasite. He's cloaked. He's kind of dressed, like Ben Grimm out on the town. He's got the big hat and the trench coat and stuff, so people can't see his weird appearance. And this is a time period where Galaxy Broadcasting is owned by Morgan Edge, and Clark is a broadcaster. He's late for a meeting with the staff because of his Superman activities in the beginning. Basically, it's Parasite's tracking down Superman coming in. There is a spot where Clark talks to Supergirl in Chicago. They have a conversation where they talk about meeting each other at for lunch, and Clark specifies 12:17. It's just like, oh, that's kind of a weirdly specific, but okay. And Clark has something planned. But Clark is starting to feel weird, and he tells everybody that he's got, maybe he thinks he's coming down with the flu, but obviously he knows he's Kryptonian and he can't get the flu, so he's like, what the hell's going on? And of course it turns out, the parasite is sapping his powers, and that's why he feels funny. So Parasite confronts him in like the storage room in the broadcast offices, and he actually beats up on Superman a bit because he has stolen his powers. And then Parasite leaves. After knocking him out, Clark wakes up and Lana Lang is attending to him. And Clark makes some excuses. He's got his powers back, so he heads out as Superman and manages to track down Parasite. So they battle for a while in the streets of Metropolis, and Parasite gets the better of him again. And then he uses Superman's powers. He flies him up and he puts him in this big gold-colored box that he's planning on imprisoning him in. But it doesn't take, excuse me, it doesn't take long. Hang on. Okay.
You okay?
Yeah, I was just getting, I figured I'd mute it for, because I had to do a real good throat clearing there.
Oh.
It's getting some flam. So it does take long for Superman to break out. He actually, apparently, Clark's glasses are made out of glass from his rocket ship, so they're harder than normal. He's actually used the take the lens out of his glasses and cut the thing that he's stuck in open and confront Parasite. And so the fight continues, and he basically gets the best of them. And at the meeting at 12:17, he finally meets up with Supergirl, and Supergirl says, "Oh, I actually I had some trouble with Parasite too." He said, "Parasite? So did I. Well, we can compare notes later, but right now, cover your eyes and turn your head in that direction." So she does, and then she says, "Oh my gosh." And then the issue ends. I'm like, what the hell?
It's very, very interesting that you chose this because I almost chose the Supergirl single issue from this time period. Not the one that I think you're going to jump into, but number one.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, it is.
That would have been like one of the connections we've had
Yeah,
here
yeah.
many times. But yeah, so I was like, oh, what the hell? I was like, what issue does this continue in? And so fortunately they had, it's Supergirl 20, and fortunately they did have this issue on Comixology. So it's funny, it says the new Teen Titans and Justice League of America appear in the issue, and they're in the background on the cover. Well, some of them are, and but it's really just kind of a cameo appearance. Supergirl says, "Superman, I can't believe it. This is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me." So this is basically, it's written by Paul Kupperberg again, but the art on this issue is Carmine Infantino and Bob Oxner, and this is called Celebration, and this is basically a parallel story. I mean, where Supergirl has to deal, we see what was going on with her leading up to the end of Action Comics 555, where she has to deal with what seems like Parasite. We see the same conversation that she had with Superman in the other issue. And
Quick, quick, quick interlude. Tangent. Do you remember that one package that I had delivered from eBay that arrived and it was like run over like five times and the comics were missing? You know who they were from? You know who I was buying from? Paul Kupperberg.
Like,
an
where is he going for
interesting
this?
just yeah just an interesting
That's funny.
I at this he had quite a collection, and the one thing about Paul is he was selling really great books for really cheap. Like if it was like early 70s or Bronze Age to the early 80s, like this one, like really cheap. And I was like buying from him, and like I would go into his store and buy like, I don't know, 6 to 10 books. And that last one was such a good find because it had like some old Sergeant Rock and old Men of War, and like it was a really good list of books I would have had. And they're all lost.
It sucks.
Yeah, they're run over. Somebody stole all of them, and oh well. Just a tangent, but it's
What
related a little bit.
can you do? Yeah, that's funny. So long story short, Supergirl has her own kind of similar fight with Parasite. But if you read the other issue, you're kind of wondering, well, how are they in two places at once? Because Parasite does something similar where he ends up imprisoning Supergirl in this gold-looking machine or gold-looking box up in the sky, using Supergirl's powers the way that he uses Superman's. And Supergirl, she doesn't wear glasses, but she does have this special comb, which we see earlier in the issue. She uses it. It's like treated so that she can just comb her hair, and it turns her hair from the Supergirl hair to the Linda Danvers hair.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah,
A super comb.
it's not a wig. She just combs her hair, and not only does it like change the color of it, it makes her it shorter and not curly, because Linda Danvers has just like this short brown bob cut. But so she uses this comb that she still. I mean, Parasite really has to search these heroes before he locks them up. So she uses the comb to cut out of her box. And but when she defeats him, it reveals that he's actually a clone of Parasite and was used to be a distraction to distract her so she wouldn't come to the aid of Superman fighting the real Parasite. Well, so anyway, we finally get to the thing we didn't get to see where they have their meeting, Superman, Supergirl at 12:17, and it's revealed that the reason that it's 12:17 is that that was apparently the exact time that she arrived on Earth. And so there's a double page spread, and it's got Supergirl in the foreground, kind of an awkward pose, like she's, oh no, wait, yeah, she's in the foreground and the background, so I guess I don't know. That's just like emblematic of her arrival or something, because she's standing with Superman. And yeah, I mean, you see the current Justice League of America and some of the Teen Titans in the background, and that's kind of like all that they do, is that they're there for the celebration. Cyborg and Beast Boy, though, they Beast Boy's always after the ladies, so he wants her to join the Teen Titans. And Hawkman apparently was one that supplied some special effects for the celebration, and that's what the so that's what that was all about. That's what Superman did a nice surprise for, invited their friends. but Parasite seemed kind of dumb. Because he was operating on Eastern Standard Time, but when he was in Chicago, he didn't realize the time difference. And so somehow, I don't know. Yeah, he was using his po he was using Supergirl's powers, but he said something about them being strongest at noon. But he didn't realize it was only 11 o'clock in Chicago when he was doing it. So, and they talk about how they ended up in the same exact predicament, and Supergirl says the way that they got out of it was totally different, which I don't really agree with. But so these were okay, like 3 out of 5s. I mean, they were kind of amusing, but there was a lot of similarities between the two issues, so it wasn't like, I mean, they kind of used it as a plot device, but it wasn't necessarily like the most interesting to read back to back because of that.
Was it a part of the sale, or did you have to go outside to get the second part?
I had to pay the, well, it's just only $2 though, because it was an
Yeah.
old issue. But yeah, I mean, it was because I bought the Action Comics issues. I bought like
99.
four of them for 99 cents like last
Yeah.
year sometime, and I had read, they were right in a row, so I had already
Don't
read
you hate when they do that? I hate
what.
when Comixology does that though. Like they did that with
Oh,
one
they
of
don't.
the Batman four-parter or something like that, where three of them were on sale and one wasn't. I'm
Oh,
like,
gotcha.
or if it crossed over books, like if part one is like, let's say you're reading I don't know, one of those big Batman events, Cataclysm or No Man's Land or something.
Right,
You're
right.
reading through it, and it jumps into another title. And that title's either not, I mean, it's usually there, but you have to pay more for it.
Yeah. Yeah, because a lot, yeah, they'll do sales and based on just the title,
Yeah.
not whether it crosses over. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's possible it was on sale at the same time, and I just didn't know.
How do
But
you read your Comixology? Just out of curiosity.
I'm on Kindle usually.
Okay, so
The
it's
Kindle.
already a Amazon product.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't. Well, we have an iPad in the house, but I just tend to use this Kindle because I got it refurbished for cheap, and I feel like I can just toss it around.
Yeah, well,
But the iPad's
I
expensive.
have the iPad, but I have the first generation and it won't support Comixology, but it does support the DC app because they're smart and the Marvel app because they're smart. But Comixology is like I have to read it through the browser if I'm going to do it, you know?
Yeah, that's annoying.
Yeah.
I used to read comics sometimes on my computer back when there was no other option.
Yeah.
Like I used to have a Marvel Unlimited subscription back before like tablets were, if they existed, they weren't common. It was definitely
Yeah.
before iPads and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So there wasn't any other option. I was just like, at the time it was cool 'cause I was like, holy crap, look at all these comics I can read legally, you know. And but yeah, now that tablets are an option, it's not a great experience reading a comic on a computer,
Right.
even a laptop. Laptop's okay, but
Well,
anyways, that's it for me.
I've got one more. And this one you'll appreciate because it's Wally West.
Oh yeah, I saw you read this, yeah.
Yeah. So, I really, and I think we really enjoyed DC Rebirth, like we really did. And
Yes.
it got me a hungry to read some older Flash. So I read the first Geoff Johns published comic book. Was it 263? I can't remember. I have
One
to look it up.
64.
164. I had the six right. It's like Price is Right. You could guess all three numbers, and I only had the middle number right. So, but I could still spin the wheel at the end. Because I didn't win the prize, but I could at least try to win, you know, to spin the wheel and go down to the Showcase Showdown, right?
There you go.
So this issue was written by Geoff Johns, and the artist was an artist I don't remember too well. Do you know what his name is offhand?
Angel
Angel, Angel,
Anzueta.
Anzueta. There you go.
Anzueta.
He did a really good job. At least I thought he did. But I don't remember him at all. So this is his first story arc, and it plays into like a lot of what Geoff Johns does because this issue he doesn't remember who he is or where he's at. So like he's being arrested by Keystone City Police, and he doesn't even know why. And they're saying, "Well, what are you doing in a Flash suit? You're a teacher at the, you're a PE teacher at this elementary school or whatever." And he's like, "No, I'm not. I'm, you know, they don't believe who he is, even though he's in costume. They try to take off his costume, and the costume doesn't come off." And he said, "That's because it's part of the Speed Force." But it's like he's like in some kind of alternate reality, and he's being arrested. And then he punches a cop, and then it just makes things worse. And they're looking up his crimes, and he says, "Well, wow, he's never had a criminal record before. Why is he punching cops and trying to get away or whatever?" And it looks like there's some kind of, and I don't remember this issue too well. The only thing I remembered was the cliffhanger. It is he's in jail, and then eventually Captain Cold comes to free him, which is odd, but that is cool. And actually Heatwave, Rory, is a Keystone Police in this alternate timeline. So he even starts to think like, what the hell could be going on? You know, is this Abracadabra or somebody that's messing with me? Why is are the police dressed like this? And what is that police officer that was big in Wade's Run and Shirey, or I can't remember what his name was. But he was like a
Oh,
huge like supporting character.
right.
He had the fucked up face. Do you, they always Scott Collins would draw his face so bad, like he had some rough acne back in the day or something.
Yeah, I never knew exactly if you say it how like Shirey or if you say Chire or
Chire or Shirey.
yeah, I wasn't I
Maybe if I
never
watched an
knew how to
animated
say it out
show,
loud.
it'll show up in the cartoon. But yeah, he was like one of the major cops that was taking him down, but it was really cool. They had a Jay Garrick scene in there where he sees Jay, and Jay is he, they keep showing it, and it's they almost look like alien creatures because their mouths like morph into these, like when he sees them every now and then, they look human, and then he like will flick his head and then they don't look human anymore. It's like they have these huge alien teeth that are coming out of them, and I don't know what the entities are. So that's to be determined in a future episode, I'm sure. But it was a really good issue. It was his first issue that he wrote as Flash, and we know he wrote an awful lot. And I would say he's my favorite Flash writer, but I think he's my favorite because he really did a lot for the Rogues. Like there's certain things I think a lot of people did. Like Mark Waid did a lot for the Speed Force. You know, like he developed all that. And then Geoff Johns made you really he took the Rogues and made them more three-dimensional. Like he really built them up. And that's what I think of his run. His run is my favorite. And then I'd probably go with my old and glorious Kerry Bates, and then followed by Mark Waid as you know, my top three. But they're good runs. And Wally is just the my favorite Flash by a long shot. And the rebirth solidified it for so many reasons. Like he's got so much heart, man. And I just like love him for
Yeah, he's okay.
it. He's okay.
Yeah, I think I agree
I'm
that.
gonna spoil this part, but he's part, if you haven't read it, stop it. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. But I like that they took Wally and put him into the Kid Flash in the Speed Force. Do you know what I mean? I like that they put him to make him look distinctively different and where he started being a hero at by putting him into that costume instead of putting him into the Flash costume, which you, I can't guarantee, but I'm almost 100% sure he spent a lot more time in the Flash costume than he did in the other costume, at least on an ongoing title. Maybe not duration, but
Maybe not like it's hard to say, but I
could,
mean,
yeah, because New Titans was, God, it ran a long time. It's really hard to tell.
and but he eventually moved off of that to become the Flash. But yeah, I mean, I also thought like how he might picture himself, you know, like he's the second Flash, but he was the first Kid Flash, you know.
Right.
And like that was the role that like anybody else that becomes Kid Flash looks back to Wally, you know.
Right. But
So I
just and then
wonder if that's
they
part of it.
actually tied him into the other Kid Flash. That was interesting.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see.
Interesting but believable. Like I think Jeff is a master of that, you know. He's a way of crafting words in such a way that it's not easy to question him.
Yeah, I mean as believable as like cousins with the same name, both becoming speedsters. I mean, but that if you can't accept that, then you probably don't like comic books.
Right, right.
At
And then
least
the only
superhero
other Kid
books.
Flash is Impulse. So we've had three, right?
Yeah, 'cause Wally's daughter briefly became a second Impulse,
But
but not as Kid
never had
Flash.
the name Kid Flash. What was his other son? His other son had a different power set. It was like a mass. He would be able to tap into the Speed Force, but it had to do with mass, I thought.
Yeah, he can control his
It's,
mass, and he
yeah.
never really took on an identity, I don't think, other
Yeah.
than
And then he
that.
lost it. Do you remember?
Yeah.
The girl kept it, but he lost it.
Yeah, I think if they had continued telling stories about them, I think he would have kind of struggled with struggled with the dark side. I think that's where they were going with the
That's
sun.
where that's where they were going.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
He would have either turned a villain or he would have been had a lot of angst towards his sister, I think,
Yeah,
and maybe his father.
I remember it kind of reminded me of Obsidian and Jade. You know how Obsidian had the darker side.
Yeah.
But
He had the darker side, but he was still heroic.
yeah, he was,
I
you know,
mean,
anytime he was like a
he
straight out
did go
villain, it
over
was
to the
usually.
yeah, did go to the dark side a little bit.
But it was usually there was like usually something going on, like
Yeah.
to influence him or something like that. It was a struggle, not like
They
his
remind me a
education.
lot of Cloak and Dagger because Cloak is very similar in the fact that he could go to the dark side if he wasn't careful and just
Yeah.
start consuming stuff.
Right.
And Dagger kept his kept him in check,
Yeah.
or kept him from losing control.
Right.
Yeah, I love comics. I just think they're amazing.
You could just keep riffing, you know.
Yeah, I
This
could.
connection to this connection.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I think I need to wrap things up.
Okay. Well,
But
enjoy the rest of your holiday weekend, and you can
yeah,
read
you
us
too.
at MythMakingETC on the Twitters, at Mike Myers Brunch, geekbrunchpodcast.com, and mythmakingetc@gmail.com, and mike@comicbooknoise.com. And I think that's about it, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah, we'll see if we. I think if we record 2 weeks from now, that's like the Sunday before Heroes. So we'll see if that works out.
Yeah, I'll see if it works out. Next week, I'll let you know if, or early this week, if you want to watch that first episode for the next one.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds good.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye.